Today's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
It's the Sacktown Royalty Show. Here's your host, Greg Wissinger.
Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. I'm your host, Greg Wissinger. Excited to be welcoming back to the program our friend Sam Vecini from CBS Sports, college basketball coverage, NBA draft expert, here to break down all the different possibilities for the Kings. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Greg. How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing real good, thanks. So, you know, we're right in the heart of it. We're right in the heart of draft season, but we're also kind of in that period where there's not a lot of new information going on.
Oh, people think there's new information.
Well, but yeah, but there's not. There's agents and teams feeding information to the media, but
right. Yeah, you gotta kind of slow down on a lot of that. Like, someone reported yesterday that Cameron Payne has like a promise already, and I'm just like, there are a lot of people that could do that, but there are a lot of people that could tell you that, but they're probably not speaking the truth.
After all the stories that have come out over the years of where a promise has like just destroyed a team's draft because someone fell and they committed to their promise, why would any team still do it?
I mean, I get it if you're talking about international guys. If you want a specific international guy to stay in the draft, because, you know, for instance, this year there's a guy, Alpha Kaba. He plays in France. He's an interesting, like 6'10", 230-pound guy who's athletic. He can shoot, but he's just very, very raw. You know, like it's going to take him 2 to 3 years to be ready to come over to the NBA. But he said that he'll stay in if a team commits to picking him. So, you know, from that point of view, I get promising a guy. If you want him to stay in the draft, you want that option at least. That makes sense to me. Outside of that, though, with college kids, like the reasoning behind it, if you're a team, is you want to try and get the other guy, you want to try and get your guy to not work out for any of the teams above you or any of the teams like directly below you, so that, you know, you can shut him down and he can be your guy, right? But why would a guy do that? Like, it doesn't make any sense for someone to do that unless you're just very happy with the situation, if you're very happy overall. But you're risking a lot doing that as a player, and it just doesn't seem to me to be a prudent course of action. If I was a guy's agent, I would not recommend doing that as a prudent course of action, especially if I had a guy who's a competitor. Like, it doesn't really make sense. And Cameron Payne's definitely a guy that's a competitor. I would be very surprised if we hear that he's done working out for the whole process. it's very strange. It's a lot of misinformation. A lot of people that, you know, I get the idea of reporting it. If you think you have something solid, like from 3 or 4 sources, you know, it's probably worth reporting, but you just have to contextualize it well. You have to make sure that people understand, hey, like, who knows what's going to happen on draft night for sure, but, you know, they've made it clear that they're interested in this guy if he's there.
Yeah, to be fair, it's not just making a promise to a guy that doesn't make sense about this time of year. This time of year has so much misinformation floating out.
Right.
There's so many strange reports. The whole process has turned into this whole unwieldy thing where you guys won't work out against each other anymore. It's all jockeying for position and just trying to kind of trick people instead of, you know, anyone being willing to go out there and kind of prove their worth, which I get because there's millions of dollars on the line and, mm-hmm. you know, where you end up as a player, and there's a lot of things that go into it, but man, the whole process is kind of weird at this point.
Yeah, it's very much a stock market game more than it is a basketball game. Where your stock is, or where your perceived stock is amongst other teams and amongst, I mean, not really amongst media, but amongst, you know, agents, draft experts, people like that, because to a certain extent, I like to think that that matters a little bit, because it, I mean, teams get information from it more than you would think, surprisingly. It matters to an extent, and it ends up becoming more of a stock game. And for instance, right now we're seeing a guy in Kevon Looney who got hurt a little bit at the end of the year, where his stock, you know, some people had him in the top five. I never bought that. I had him like as high as, I want to say like 12. I have him at 16 now, but he got hurt at the end of the year and he hasn't been working out for a lot of teams. He worked out for some teams, but it apparently doesn't seem like he's 100% yet. And his stock's falling at this point. He could be a guy that is a freshman, as a 19-year-old. He could really end up working out well for a team, but it's just such a tough nut to crack at this point, especially whenever your stock seems to have peaked earlier than it should have.
So with that in mind, you know, kind of all the different pieces that go into the process, all the misinformation that's out there, is it even possible to make an educated guess of where the Kings might be going with the sixth pick?
Sure. I mean, here's the thing, like, more than information, teams draft on common sense. So what the Kings have right now, the Kings have George Karl in place. You have to think they want to try and get up and down, right? Like, even with DeMarcus Cousins there, they're probably going to try and play a wide open, spacing-oriented half-court offense, and they're probably going to try and get out and transition as much as possible, right? Like, you can educated guess that, and you can probably be right. Right, Greg?
I'd say that's fair, and you could also add in there that they're probably looking for a guy who's ready sooner rather than later. They're not looking for a project right now.
Right. It seems like Vivek, he wants to win now, which, you know, why would you fire Mike Malone in that case? Why would you take the advice of your guys and fire Mike Malone in that case? But that's done. So you're clearly looking for a guy who's going to be ready to at least contribute as a rookie, I think. You know, Ben McLemore and Nick Stauskas, both of those guys kind of struggled early on in their rookie years, basically throughout all of their rookie years, actually. I tried to sugarcoat it and be nice there. They weren't very good as rookies, both of them. But you see that Ben McLemore came along, especially near the end of the year, or near the middle of the year, really, I would say. And you would expect the same for Nick Stauskas, especially in a George Karl type sim, where he's going to be pretty heavily counted on to make smart decisions and just shoot the basketball. And those are two things that he can do well. So you would think that with their progression of, you know, who they have in now and who they could possibly pick, you would think that a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein probably sticks out to them, is someone that could help take some pressure defensively off of DeMarcus Cousins, could be ready to play reasonably soon just because he's physically ready in a lot of ways. He's a very good athlete. He's a little bit older than most of these guys. He'll be a 22-year-old rookie or a 21. I want to say he'll probably be 21 to start the year and then turn 22 midway through the year. That's the kind of guy that you're looking for, I think, if you're the Kings. But who knows, with what seems like a very unsettled front office situation, it's going to be tough to really make a lot of guesses here, I think.
Yeah, so we're recording this right now on Thursday. The big news that came out today was Woj was reporting that Pete D'Alessandro might be kind of on his way out of the Kings front office, might take over the, what was it, the
St. John's
athletic
director
at
yeah.
St. John's, which he's an alumni there. He, you know, has close ties with Chris Mullin, who just left the Kings organization and went there to be head coach of their basketball program. So there's a lot of reasons it makes sense. It does also make a lot of sense to Kings fans who've been paying attention in that, you know, it very clearly is now Divock's front. He's the one in charge of the front office. Pete's power kind of went away over the past couple months. Everyone expected that he would leave the team officially at the same time Mullin did, but he just kind of lingered on, and they're like, no, we like him. He brings valuable skills. We're going to keep him.
Which, by the way, he's been at just about every scouting event that I've been to this year. He was at Hoop Summit. He was at the Combine. Like,
and that's the interesting wrinkle.
Yeah, he's there. He's scouting these guys. He's preparing as if he is going to be making the pick. or at least being in on the conversations when the pick is made. So
yeah, from everyone you talk to, he's the guy doing the player scouting in person, which if he's on the way out, and let's say he leaves in the next week.
Yeah.
What does that do to the Kings' draft plans, their draft strategy, their draft board, you know, all these different pieces, you know, and just their ability to make an informed decision? It's just one more thing that you kind of wonder. It's like, well, this didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it seemed like since, what, February, I would say, that when I think Mark Stein is the one who got it initially, said that Vladi is going to be the main showrunner there going forward in Vivek's ownership circle or in his front office circle, which is, I mean, it's strange considering he was probably chain smoking over in Europe for about a decade beforehand. But like, it's just a very strange decision. And given Vladi's background, it's hard to say, like, will he favor international players? Like, could the Kings be a landing spot for a Hezonja or a Porzingis? Just because, you know, he's from that area. He likes guys like that, you would think. Those two are the wild cards, I think, there. Plus Emmanuel Mudiay would fit a need if he was to fall. But at six, the Kings are in a pretty good position, I think, to kind of let the board come to them if they want to. Like, they have some interesting wings that are in place already. They have DeMarcus Cousins. Both Porzingis and Cauley-Stein would be good fits next to Cousins in theory. Mudiay would fit a need. D'Angelo Russell, if somehow he fell to six, I sincerely doubt he does. But who knows? Like, it's very difficult, but I think they're in a very good position to let the board come to them and see what happens.
So the other big wild card I see is that no one seems clear on what the Knicks are going to do.
That's
just kind of a constant state of the NBA. So. But with the Knicks there potentially trading out of it, trading down in the draft, picking God knows who they might take, that obviously throws a big wrench in it. But the other thing is, I don't know that there's a clear read on where Orlando's leaning.
Yeah. I mean, Orlando's a very tight-lipped organization to begin with, so they're always very tough to be picking behind. You know, the Aaron Gordon thing last year kind of came out of nowhere. But Rob Hennigan has an MO on guys that he likes. He likes high-character guys that are very, very good athletes. You know, that's where the Mo Harkless trade came from within Dwight Howard, why they really wanted him. That's why they picked Victor Oladipo. That's why they've chosen Elfrid Payton and Aaron Gordon last year. Like, they really like those guys who they think they can teach to shoot and improve the rest of their skills, but you can't really teach athleticism and you can't teach character. So that makes me think that Justice Winslow is probably pretty high on their board, but it's going to be very, very, very tough to pick behind them because they could go Hezonja, they could go just about, they could go Porzingis, they could go any which way and it wouldn't be a total shock.
And that description you just said, you know, guys who are really gifted athletes and that they believe they can teach them to shoot, that throws up a red flag that they could just as easily be going for Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, they could easily pick Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, he would not help their spacing issues in the slightest.
Right, but they've also drafted with no regard to spacing issues.
Right. Cauley-Stein's a very good kid. Like, he's a high-character kid that is a very smart, very, very intelligent kid. But there are legitimate questions about his love of basketball. You know, Jason King of Bleacher Report wrote probably one of the better college basketball features on a single player this year on Willie Cauley-Stein and his upbringing and everything. And, you know, even his guardian from, I want to say they're in Kansas City, they've said that Cauley-Stein, it's questionable how much he loves the game, or like he just started to love the game a little bit more than he has in the past. So that's going to throw up a red flag to teams. I think that might scare off the Magic a little bit, but who knows? Like, it's all, it's all up in the air with them. It could all go crazy.
So throwing out, you know, fit and where we think guys might end up. I mean, what does your top seven of your board look like if you were to shake it out right now?
In a it's so hard. Every team's going to have a different top seven.
Of course.
In a vacuum right now, I have Towns number one, Okafor number two, Moutier number three, Russell four, Justice Winslow five, Cauley-Stein six, and Mario Hezonja seven.
So you don't have Porzingis in the top.
I have Porzingis at eight. So okay. I'm right there mostly with a lot of the guys. I have questions about Porzingis' body. He has broad shoulders, but he has a pretty thin waist. And he's not real tough in the paint, and that could just be a strength thing, that he really just struggles to be down there. But he's not real tough in the paint. I think that that could cause some issues as far as rebounding basketball, as far as defense. He could be a good weak side shot blocker, but I wonder if he can like be a legitimate rim protector. The spacing ability is very good. A lot of his skills are very good. He's a very, very fluid athlete. But the body concerns, I think, are very legitimate with him, even though he does, like I said, have like the broad shoulders. His lower body needs a lot of work.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Hezonja, who Kings fans, we haven't really been talking about him a whole lot, mostly because, if I understand it correctly, he's maybe got some buyout issues. Is that right?
I don't think so.
No?
No. As far as I know, he has an out this year. An out in his contract that will be cheaper than it is the rest of the years in his contract. So he will be looking to come over. Plus, he's not very happy at Barcelona. He's been, DNP coach's decision a few times since he's declared for the draft, just because.
That's European basketball.
Right. I don't have any information on this. I've been trying to find some on what the exact numbers are and what it could be. But as far as I know, my guess would be he comes over this year and his buyout isn't outrageous.
Okay, so I may have had some bad information. So in that case, I mean, the little I have heard about him is he's kind of an ideal current NBA wing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. He does a lot well. He's a very good athlete, very good shooter, has pretty good ball handling ability. Defensively, like all 19, 20 year olds, he goes up and down. He has potential there, though. He hasn't been measured, but guesses he's going to come in around like a 6'9 to 6'10 wingspan, which is fine for both guard positions, or for the guard and small forward position. The questions with him are his personality, because he pretty much always thinks he's the best player on the floor, whether or not it's true. So he can be a guy that's, the best word I've heard is fiery. And that doesn't always, depending on what you want to add to the Kings organization right now, it'd be interesting, I would say, to see how that would go down. But he's a guy that might be an all-star, or he might be like the Croatian J.R. Smith or Nick Young. He's a better passer than those guys, which I think is going to help a lot. He's a little bit better of a creator, I would say, than Nick Young, but if he doesn't translate well to the game over here, he could go that way. I tend to lean more toward him being a legitimate starting caliber player, legitimate, like, very useful borderline all-star player. But it's
okay.
The questions are there.
Okay, so a little bit more kind of broad spectrum for the draft process, because we're still about a month away. Over the next month, we know the draft boards will shift. Who is the guy that, if you're putting money on, you mentioned kind of the stock game. So much of it is, how a player rises or falls over the next month, regardless of the fact that they're playing basketball against chairs. If you had to put money on the guy who's going to be the riser this year, every year someone comes out, whether it's Damian Lillard kind of shooting up draft boards or someone along those lines. Alfred Who's going to be the guy who rises this year?
Yeah, last year it was Elfrid Payton.
Sure.
You know, Cameron Payne's a pretty good guess. I have him 22 on my board. I've written a long, long scouting report on him already. He's good, not great. He might not ever be an NBA starting point guard, in my opinion. He struggles to get all the way to the rim, and he's not like a Steph Curry shooter. He's a good shooter. Maybe like a very good above average shooter, but he's not like an elite shooter by any means. And he has a nice in-between game. He's good in the pick and roll, but he's just so wiry thin that I think it's going to be a struggle for him to really ever make an impact beyond like scoring point guard. And he looks for his own shot a lot too. I know that he said at the combine, I was standing right next to him talking to him about how he likes to look for teammates, but it doesn't, he averaged something like 6 assists per game, but his assist percentage wasn't like really high. So it's questionable whether or not he's going to be able to make a ton of plays for others. But who knows? Once he gets into the greater spacing of the NBA, he might just, you know, find more passing lanes and find more holes. And once he plays with greater talent, he may feel more comfortable passing to those guys. Regardless, though, I think that he's a decent bet to rise into the teens by the time that the draft rolls around. Another guy that I really like that I don't really get why a lot of people are so hesitant on him is Bobby Portis from Arkansas. He's a very complete prospect, and he's a guy that you can guarantee is going to play hard. He's a very good modern NBA prospect in that he's going to be able to step in and knock down 20-footers. He's physically ready to play in the NBA right now, which is always nice. He's pretty long. He's 6'11 with about a 7'2, 7'2.5 wingspan. He's good in the paint. He has a decent post game. He has very good touch. He's a pretty solid rebounder. He's actually improved a lot in that regard. He guards on the perimeter. He's just not very explosive is the thing. Like he's more of a David West athlete than he is I'm trying to think of someone else than a Willie Cauley-Stein level athlete, and that's fine. I can't see a way that he doesn't at least become a solid role player in the NBA. And once you start getting to the 12 range, I think that has a lot of value.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams that would really enjoy it if they had managed to find a few more solid role players at, you know, the 12, 15, 20 range.
So. Exactly. If you're the Pacers, for instance, and I've had him going to the Pacers for a while, and I think I might be the only guy nationally to have that, because I don't even know if he's met with them, to be honest. he fits there just so well because both of their guys are going to be free agents next year. They're apparently looking to deal Roy Hibbert as it is. They've said they want to compete next year. He's definitely, in my opinion, the most ready on both ends to contribute early in that range. I mean, you have Porzingis, Miles Turner, Trey Lyles, Kaminsky, Looney. All of those guys pose their own set of problems as far as them playing early in the NBA. But Portis plays hard. You know that he's going to be able to shoot the ball. You know he's going to be able to finish around the rim. And you know he's going to be able to at least give a lot of effort defensively. And that has value to me. So I don't really understand why the Pacers wouldn't be looking at him. Maybe they are. I don't know. But starting around there, I think that he'd be a very good pick.
So now the other side of that coin. Every year there's someone who slides down a couple spots further than expected. It seems like a lot of years the Kings end up drafting that player, like a Thomas Robinson, a Ben McLemore. But who is the guy who you would, you know, again, kind of just placing the bets, would bet on sliding considerably from where they're currently more towards the top of the first round?
Yeah, Kevon Looney, I mentioned at the top. He seems to be pretty much all over the board right now. I did talk to one team that has him really low. They have him like in the 20s, I think, or like the back end of the 20s. And that was interesting to me because, you know, I was surprised to hear that they considered him a late first round pick because he has a lot of tools. He has a lot of defensive versatility. He has a pretty high motor. Again, though, he's just not the most explosive athlete, but he's a really good rebounder. He hounds the ball. Once he gets the ball, he can start the break himself, which is a very good skill to have. He has decent shot mechanics that you can work with him and improve them. But, you know, some teams just are concerned about that athleticism, I think, and his fit in the NBA. That's definitely a guy that I could see falling. The further we get from the NCAA tournament, I could see guys like Sam Decker and Tyus Jones dropping a little bit, just because Jones doesn't really have the physical tools. He's a very good player. Actually, I would take him over Cameron Payne just due to age and due to the fact that I trust him to improve and continue to work hard. Not that I don't trust Payne to do those things, but you know, I just have a very high belief in Tyus Jones succeeding somehow in the NBA, at least as a backup. And Decker doesn't really have any elite skill right now to translate. He's a very smart player. I guess that might be his elite skill in that he's a very, very smart, very, very high IQ player. But if you look at what he actually does on the floor, he's a very inconsistent shooter, doesn't defend yet, not a great ball handler. It's just hard for me to see how he fits into the NBA right now.
Okay, now one of the other possibilities, and you know, this is something that more and more Kings fans are kind of talking themselves into being a possibility. It seems pretty clear that, you know, Towns, Okafor, and Russell would be gone, but some Kings fans are starting to talk themselves into scenarios where Moutier would be available.
I think that's possible.
How do you see a player like him fitting with the Kings if he was available and they took him?
Oh, incredibly. He would be an awesome fit with the Kings. If George Karl wants to run a ton of pick and roll, Manuel Moutier is probably the best pick and roll guard in this draft. He has terrific vision, very good passing ability. He turns the ball over a decent amount, but it's mostly because of...
He'll fit right in.
Well, it's mostly because of silly young things that he does. Like, he'll try and make the spectacular pass a lot when a good pass will do. That's something that I think he'll grow out of. He's a big player. He's a good athlete, a very good athlete, not a great athlete. Some people have said, like, they've thrown around, like, the John Wall, Russell Westbrook stuff. That's crazy to me. He's more in, like, the Tyreke Evans mold of athlete where he's going to be able to get where he wants. He's just big. He's strong. He's quick. But he's not like that uber explosive guy who's going to take the ball from one end and go straight to the other end, like in two dribbles and, you know, just go crazy like Russell Westbrook does or like John Wall does. But having said that, I like his fit a lot. It would be interesting with the Kings because I think they have a pretty unsettled point guard position. They could use an upgrade on Darren Collison. But you could also start doing some really interesting small ball stuff, which I'm sure George Karl would love. You could throw Collison off ball a little bit, and he's pretty good spot up 3-point shooter, so that would help. You could start playing Stauskas and McLemore at the three a little bit. You could move Rudy Gay down to the four and just have a totally wide open small ball offense. That would be really fun to me. I really like Emmanuel Moutier a lot. I think I'm higher on him than some people are, but I think that he's going to fit well in the NBA. I've seen some people say he has a pretty low floor. Yes and no. I mean, if you consider the fact that his floor might be like a Tyreke Evans, maybe what he is now in New Orleans, as opposed to, you know, that dominant rookie year that he had. Maybe that's a pretty low ceiling, but I don't, for a top five pick at least, but I like him a lot and I don't really see a way where he totally fails.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I'm curious, just kind of in, not even specific to any one player, but you know, we kind of talked about how right now, you know, Orlando's a tight-lipped organization. The Kings organization is very much in flux. It seems like at certain points they can't keep anything out of the media. When it comes to their draft process and their evaluation process, I mean, how much information is being filtered out there, or, you know, how much is being played close to the vest right now?
For the Kings specifically or generally?
For the Kings.
Oh, you know, it's hard to say what's what's real and what's not, first and foremost, just because you never know where the information's coming from. If it's coming from the D'Alessandro wing of the front office, then you have to take it with a grain of salt, because there's like a 50-50 shot that he won't be there come June 25th. If it's coming from the Divot side, you don't really know either, because no one really knows him real well yet, as far as I know. So yeah, it's very tough. There's not a there's some information out there. Cause, like, I know they do like Cauley Stein, or at least one part of the front office likes Cauley Stein. Not really sure which one, but you know, it seems pretty clear that the front office does like Cauley Stein. It's tough to say beyond that, I would say, at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else Kings fans should be aware of at this point, kind of going into the draft and going into the point now where we're really ramping up the pre-draft process? Anything else Kings fans should really know about to prepare themselves?
You know, I would just say to try and watch as much film on these guys as possible. It's not that bad watching college basketball games. I do it year round. You'll gain some insights into how they'll fit into the Kings organization specifically. You guys probably have a decent feel for how George Karl wants to run the ship at this point. Even, you know, more casual fans probably do. And it's not hard to see, for instance, how a guy like Willie Cauley Stein's going to fit in. You know, he's going to help take pressure off DeMarcus Cousins defensively. He's going to be a good screen and roll guy. And as far as a big man rolling to the hoop, because he's a great athlete. He's a great, great athlete at running in transition. So I think that's interesting. But the question there offensively is going to be, does the way teams defend him, the teams will probably just leave their big man back and either force the guard to take a mid-range contested jump shot, or they'll, you know, totally defend the role from Cauley Stein and have a second big guy in the paint for whenever you inbound the ball to DeMarcus Cousins. So, like, or whenever you throw an entry pass into DeMarcus Cousins. Like, it's there are strengths and there are potential pitfalls with taking a guy like Cauley Stein. Porzingis, if they want to win now, I would be surprised if Porzingis was the pick, because I think he's going to struggle to deal with the grind of the NBA immediately. That's not to say that he might not be the best player in the draft, because some people honestly believe that, and I'm not sold on it. But, you know, he undeniably has all-star potential if his body fills out and he just continues to grow his feel for the game and continues to, you know, just do the things he needs to do. Hezonja, you guys have a bunch of wings. I don't know if that's going to go down, but there are a lot of interesting guys that I think the Kings could end up with that could legitimately help them next year. It's just a question of where is this organization going? Are they kind of resigning themselves to the middle of the pack in the West by having guys like Rudy Gay and Ben McLemore right now as your other pieces around Cousins?
All right. Well, Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find the rest of your work?
CBSSports.com. I have a podcast over at Hardwood Paroxysm. We actually talked to Aaron Brewski today about the Kings. We're going to go ahead and post that, I think, on Friday. So there will probably be a lot of words coming from me about the Kings here over the next couple of days. So it's going to be pretty fun. Go ahead and just follow me on Twitter, do that whole thing, and I'm sure you'll find it.
All right. Well, again, Sam, thanks so much for coming on. It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, definitely, Greg. Anytime.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show. As always, you know, you can make sure to keep track of the show. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the show, never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us ratings, leave us comments. All of that helps us out with promoting the show. Let us know how we're doing. And of course, go to sacktownroyalty.com, leave us comments, enter in the discussion, let us know what you like and don't like. Always working on improving the show. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial by signing up at audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. It supports the show and supports our sponsor, audible.com.